Before Shopify, were you wondering, where are my sales at? Now you're selling with Shopify, the global commerce platform supercharging your selling. You have no problem selling online, in person, on social media, and beyond. Gary, easy on the cha-ching.
Oh, sorry, but my Shopify sales are through the roof.
Start selling with Shopify today and discover how millions of businesses around the world use Shopify to ignite their selling. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/listen. Shopify.com/listen.
This is the Jeff Ward Show.
I'm Jeff Ward, and the only agenda is to make you think. Dee Snider is a singer, songwriter, radio host, and actor. He was the lead singer and songwriter of the heavy metal band Twisted Sister. He was ranked number 83 among the top 100 metal vocalists of all time. Twisted Sister's biggest hits, as if you didn't know, were We're Not Gonna Take It and I Wanna Rock. He hosted the MTV show Metal Mania. In the late 1990s, he hosted a syndicated radio show with the best name, The House of Hair, with the sign-off phrase, if it ain't metal, it's crap. He also wrote The Magic of Christmas for Celine Dion's album, These Are Special Times, which he says she had no idea he had written it. His voiceover work includes the main villain for the PlayStation 2 video game. He was the voice of Angry Jack in the SpongeBob SquarePants movie. And he wrote the song, as if you didn't know this already, Goofy Goober Rock for the SpongeBob SquarePants movie. His family appeared on the A&E show Growing Up Twisted, and for three seasons he appeared on Celebrity Apprentice. His free speech position and political career has been high profile, to say the least, and interesting. In the mid-80s, along with John Denver and Frank Zappa, Dee Snider testified against a Senate committee that had a plan for warning labels on songs. In the process of these hearings, he accused then-Senator Al Gore's wife, Tipper, of having a dirty mind. He has also written his first novel, which is getting great reviews. The title of the book is Frats, published by Red Penguin Books. I got a question, Dee. I've wanted this for a long time, and I can't remember the last artist that I heard say this. And it's a weird setup, but it goes like this. Do you know a hit? And you've had huge hits. Do you know a hit when it happens? And the reason why I ask that is, I think most of us on the outside, I'm obviously on the artist side, have heard time and time again an artist talk about a big hit, and they act as if it was some throwaway or it was an accident, or, you know, my manager told me to put it at the end of the album, stuff like that. So I'm just sort of curious, as someone that's had giant hits, do you know it?
The answer is yes. The question is, will it have the opportunity to fly, so to speak? Will it get the support? Will other people see what you see? Will you have the outlet? You know, I remember when we got signed to Atlantic Records, and the president of Atlantic Records in Europe, who signed us, calling me out of the blue, and this was a transcontinental call back in the early '80s. It was like a ham radio back then. It was things to say over when you know. And he goes, Dee, there's hits on this tape. And I'm like, what? He goes, the demo you sent me, there are hits. And I was like, yeah. Didn't you listen to the music? He said, no, he signed us. He just saw the band, and he sensed that there was something there. But he was stunned. But I knew I was sending hits. But the question was it gonna get that call from the president of the label going, there's hits in these darn hills? And then, you know, in that song he was talking about wound up being our first hit single in England. And then the same goes, you know, with We're Not Going to Take It, I Want to Rock. When I wrote those songs, I knew they were hits. And get this, our producer, Tom Warman, didn't want to put them on the record. I had to beg him. I remember being on one knee because he was sitting. So I was going, Tom, seriously, these songs have to be on the album. They have to be on the album. He was like, I don't know. It kind of, I don't know. And he finally just said, okay, whatever you want. And he caved because I begged so much. Crazy.
What was the argument against?
He thought We're Not Gonna Take It was too sing-songy, na-na-na-na-na-na,
yeah.
You know, and he thought, and he had produced Molly Hatchet, and he thought, I Want to Rock, he had done that already with Molly Hatchet, had some of these gallop kind of songs,
yeah.
And he said, I've already done the gallop thing, and I'm like, it's not Molly Hatchet, it's Iron Maiden, man, and I said, and it's we got to have it on the record, so he just caved. And put them on the album. But, yeah, so like I said, you write them and you go, this is a hit, but will you get the support you need to get it out there so people can hear it?
So you've had two of those songs are, they're not just hits, but I'm going to guess here. I'm going to assume that they have to be the most politically hijacked songs of all time. And I mean politically hijacked, exactly what we all live through every election cycle, and that is those walkout songs. And then sure enough, the artist says, please stop using that. So I'm assuming you've been through this a few hundred times, right?
And when you talk about we're not going to take it, we're not going to take it is used by every sector of the spectrum of politics, from the right to the left, to women's rights, QAnon rallies and QAnon videos, anti-maskers and teachers protesting, and it's got such a wide range. I saw it being used by the WGA on the picket lines. But that's by design. I never stopped. I have spoken out against certain people just because it's an assumption that if they use your song, that you agree with their position.
Right.
So sometimes I have to say, I do not stand with this group, but I will not stop them from using the song because that's censorship, and I fought censorship long and hard back in the 80s. So I wanted people to put their own vision into the lyrics of the songs, but sometimes it's not the vision that I hope for.
Yeah, okay, so that's a different take than probably 99% of the artists out there. That, I mean, it's like I said, it's every election cycle we hear about fill-in-the-blank artists, fill-in-the-blank famous song, and then they go public and send out a cease and desist. So you've never sent a cease and desist for I Wanna Rock?
No, but I publicly, I remember I Wanna Rock, it was John Rocker. Anybody remember that guy?
Yes.
Relief pitcher for the Braves,
yes.
I believe. And he used to come out to I Wanna Rock, and he did this. And I spoke to him on the phone, and he was, oh my God, it was great to talk to him. And then that Sports Illustrated article came out where he's riding a subway in New York, and I'm from New York, and he's talking all this trash about New York and the people and people of color and people, I'm like, whoa, whoa, whoa. And so, we went and publicly said, we denounce what this guy is saying. And I actually called John first, and I said, dude, and he didn't call me back. I said, call me, explain this to me. I've had articles taken out of context. Tell me that they misquoted you, man. Tell me they misquoted you, to give me something. And he never called me back. And so I had to go public and say, hey, we do not stand with this guy, and we denounce his use of the song. But didn't say couldn't use it, just said we don't support it.
Well, he went down in flames too, didn't he?
He did. It shook his whole career.
Yeah.
I mean, that whole Sports Illustrated article.
Yep.
And, and years later, there was some things that it was a bit of a hack job. They kind of, you find out that, like so many guys, he says he was hanging with this guy for like a week. And they get, in a way, guys joke around, or maybe girls joke around as well. Guys tend to have a more sarcastic sense of humor. And when we're with friends, we sometimes say things in jest that we certainly wouldn't want to be put in a major publication, years later I found out that it was that kind of situation with John where he just let his guard down a little too much and got a little too casual, and they crucified him.
Okay, so explain your position on this, because I think it's different and it's really fascinating. So, part of the argument you hear from people all the time, I mean, when I make fun of it on my show, like Trump doing the Village People or something, I can't help but make fun of it. And then, the Village People, I can't believe I even mentioned them today, but the Village People come out and say, hey, cease and desist. And then the public's argument is, hey, man, all publicity is good publicity. So that's not your take. Your take is, I can't stop. I don't want to stop you from, explain your censorship argument on this.
Well, it is censorship if I say you cannot use you sing this song because I disagree with you. But it's not, to me, it's not censorship. I say, I'm not telling you you have to stop, but I'm telling you I don't stand with you, and I speak out publicly about it because it's like an assumption sometimes that you side with whoever's using the song. Like I said, QAnon uses it every time they do a new video. It's their song, and I am not a QAnon supporter. They say, why don't you stop them from using it? I said, that's censorship. And, and I won't censor. You know, now, interestingly, in the case of Donald Trump, we were friendly due to the Celebrity Apprentice, to my time on The Apprentice, before he started running. He called me and said, "Hey, I want to use We're Not Gonna Take It as my entrance music." I said, "Hey, yeah, go for it, man. You know, it's a friend." And then a few months later, after hearing the positions he was taking on many things that I disagreed with, I called him up. I said, "Hey, man, I got to ask you to stop using the song because I don't stand with you on the I don't take your positions on these things you're talking about." And he said, "Okay," and he stopped using it that night. And that's, you know, and very rare, by the way, does a politician ask me if they can use the song. And then Arnold Schwarzenegger did, by the way, asked, and I let him, and I'm still friends with Arnold. And he asked, and then when I called him, my kids were all freaking out. "You got to go public and denounce him." And I said, no. He asked me, "Show some respect," and asked him to stop, you know, man to man. And he did. And then I said, "Are we cool?" And he said, "Dee, we've done so much charity work together," and we had, for St. Jude's, for the Walman's ice skating rink. We've done a bunch of stuff with the family. He said, "Of course we're cool. You know, we don't agree on certain things, on some big issues, but at the same time, we're still cool."
You know, everyone that was ever on the show I shouldn't say everyone. It seems as if anyone that goes on to be high profile like yourself or anybody else that had, you know, I mean, there's some shelf life to them in their career, they end up really sucking up to Trump publicly. Did you get along with him as, you know, a producer of the show and on the show and, as you said, doing charity work? And did you find him a completely different animal politically? Did he lose you along the way? Babbel is a language learning app that sold more than 10 million subscriptions. But I can tell you firsthand how easy learning a new language can be with Babbel. So let me start by telling you how Babbel works. Then we'll talk about how it's worked for my family. Babbel gives you 15-minute lessons created by language experts, and the lessons are built around real life. So you have practical conversations about travel, relationships, business, you name it. With Babbel, you can choose from 14 different languages. That includes Spanish, French, Italian, and I guess the new language of my house, German. So here's my connection to Babbel. So one of my kids is going to Germany this summer, and he wanted to learn enough German to feel comfortable, so we got the Babbel app. And in less than 2 months, his fluency in German is amazing. He's not just getting by, he's going to fit right in. He followed the Babbel app just as instructed. So what you need to do now is go to babbel.com/Jeff Ward. That's B-A-B-B-E-L, babbel.com/Jeff Ward, to get 55% off your subscription right now. Do it now. I know it works. I'm hearing proof every single day. It's babbel.com/Jeff Ward for 55% off your subscription. B-A-B-B-E-L, that's babbel.com/Jeff Ward for 55% off. Babbel, language for life. FTX founder Sam Bankman-Fried was living a life of celebrity and luxury. He had a penthouse in the Bahamas with friends that was 100% paid for. He was on the cover of Forbes and Vanity Fair, and to many in the crypto space, he was a game changer. On top of that, he wasn't a Wall Street stiff. He wore T-shirts and running shoes and played League of Legends in board meetings. The business world knew him as SBF. But this quirky young kid who seemingly had taken crypto by storm was hiding a dark secret, according to prosecutors, and it all came apart in only 1 month. His exchange collapsed, he was in handcuffs, and thousands of investors blamed him for their losses. From Bloomberg and Wondery comes Spellcaster, a compelling new 6-part docuseries about the rise and fall of FTX and its founder, Sam Bankman-Fried. Follow Spellcaster wherever you get your podcasts. And Prime members, you can listen to episodes ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the Music app today.
Dramatically. You know, I mean, me and the Trumps, obviously, come from a time where in socializing, there was 3 rules of socializing. Don't talk about religion, sports, or politics. That was the rules of socializing. I mean, I wear a Yankees cap. I got one of my best friends with a Boston cap. I've been friends with him for 25 years. We've never mentioned our hats because that's the end of us. Okay, let's not ever speak about our hats. And we both sit there and never say a word about the fact that the enemy is sitting across the table. Okay, but you know, and so we socialized. We did many things together, and we never talked about our political beliefs. But when you start running for office, I guess that's the time you have to talk about your political and religious beliefs and possibly your team affiliation. At that point, when I found out what he was supporting, I could no longer support him. And I've been very outspoken. I'm very anti-Trump as a president. And very, very, very against his politics, hostily. I'm hostily against them.
But you did, is it fair to say that you campaigned for and with Schwarzenegger?
Oh, yeah. Arnold's another story. By the way, this is a good lead into my book, by the way, because I had read a book by Arnold Schwarzenegger called, Arnold, The Making of, I've got the title because it's really long, but it was his first book, and it was sort of motivational and autobiographical.
Yeah.
And his philosophy on his career, it was stay hungry philosophy, and inspired me. Here I was, this scrawny, cross-dressing, my brother was a bodybuilder, he said, I think you're going to like this book. And I was a scrawny, cross-dressing rocker with a dream, and I'm reading about this guy's dream, and I'm getting pure inspiration. I wrote our biggest album, the Stay Hungry album, dedicated to Arnold Schwarzenegger. I wrote the songs, We're Not Going to Take It, and I Want to Rock, inspired by Arnold Speak. And he called and asked if he could use We're Not Going to Take It for his political rallies when he was running for governor. I said, hell yeah, I sang. He's a fiscally conservative, socially liberal, which is kind of where I stand. You know, so I'm sitting right in that place where he sits. Since then, you know, we've been friendly. I presented him with an 8 million sold plaque that I owe directly to inspiration that I got from him. And I said, at least his book. And I, by the way, I have a new book out called Frats, yep, available now everywhere. So go check that out, please. Yeah. So Arnold, I support him 100%, and his political beliefs fit in perfectly with mine.
Yeah, I do want to talk to you about the book, but I can't. It's just the time in our life politically, and this intersection of art and politics is pretty fascinating. By the way, one of my kids went to see a Hall & Oates concert, and it made me think.
I'm sorry.
Yeah, I know. I freaked out too. I gave him a long lecture about testosterone and all that
Hall
stuff.
And Oates.
Yeah, exactly. And he bought a shirt. But
oh no.
Yeah.
Did he wear it? Oh my God.
But
there's
a generation where
it's not your fault. It's not your fault, man. They blame everything on the parents.
Yeah, thanks for saying that, man. I still feel responsible. There's kind of been this rebirth of 80s and 90s. You think there's a metal comeback?
Well, if metal, you're talking about old school 80s
metal kind of
thing.
Yeah.
You know, that stuff seems to oddly live on. I'm a part of that, and I look at it, and it just seemed to have had, I had something that's lacking in the music of today. That whole 80s crazy hair band, decade of decadence, all that stuff, and you keep seeing it resurrected, whether it's, and it's not just 80s, 70s too, in movies like, Guardians of the Galaxy soundtrack, or on TV shows like The Peacemaker or Cobra Kai. My God, they brought me on for Cobra Kai. Did I Want to Rock in one of the episodes, because the Johnny character is an 80s freak. And my God, it reconnected me with a whole new generation of people. And I guess they're seeing something going, where is that over the top, larger than life rock star thing that went on in the 80s that is all but gone now? You see it in the pop world, but you don't see it in the rock world so much.
Why the disconnect? Is it just a generational thing that it's, I hate to say it's a softer generation, but I don't know, maybe it is.
My kids are all headbangers, they're all metalheads.
Okay.
They all listen to the contemporary stuff, and it's all about the target marketing of the new world, the social media world. Everything is, I'm on my book right now. I've got a Facebook is target marketing. Their AI is figuring out who might be interested in a book by Dee Snider and only advertising to those people. So unless you're into heavy music, heavy metal, the contemporary metal stuff, you don't even know about these bands. But I go to these shows with my kids. By the way, they're all grown, and I'll see thousands of kids singing every word to the song of the band on the stage. And I see these passionate young performers, talented young performers that nobody knows. And the dream of making a living out of a life in rock and roll doesn't even exist for them. They're just hoping to make it to the next town by selling some T-shirts after the show. You know, it's sad to see that pure passion and see that enthusiasm for an audience and realize that the whole, that era of real rock stars, arena rockers. You know, again, we see it with the pop world, but you don't really see it in rock and roll anymore.
Yeah, no, that's absolutely. I had that discussion with somebody. I said there is no new, there's no new stadium band, not even close.
And you're seeing the old bands going out.
Yeah,
again,
I know
and
that.
Again and again.
Right. Right. Is it so? So speak to that. So you're a radio guy too, but you knew this. You got your break with radio airplay. That's not true now. I guess you could say, well, yeah, you get your break with social media. But then there's the economics of the music industry today. Would you have stuck with it today if you're doing it all over again with the economics of today?
Hard no.
Okay.
Hard no. I'll be very honest. I wanted to be a rich, famous rock and roll star. Now, mind you, the first two adjectives are the most important. I wanted to be rich and famous, and how am I going to get there? You know, I grew up a lower middle class, you know, the oldest of six kids, desperate for attention, you're getting secondhand clothes and, you know, and all that kind of stuff. And I wanted to be rich and famous. How am I going to do that? I said, well, I like rock and roll and I can sing. So, and there's gold in them, there are hills. So, but that was my purpose in life, to become rich and famous. Now, again, I admire the young artists today because there's a purity in it. They don't expect to get rich, and they don't expect to get famous. They're doing it purely because they gotta. It's what they gotta do, and I love and respect that. And it breaks my heart also to see these young artists up there with this kind of passion, knowing that eventually they're gonna have to get a job.
Was being in an '80s metal band as wild as most of us think?
It was wild for me in different ways. So and if people who know me or don't know me, the big surprise is that I never did any drugs. I never drank. I was married by the time the band started breaking, and I'm still with my wife. Trust me, with Facebook, I'd be a dead man. I know so many people who got divorced when Facebook came out.
Right.
Suddenly, there was all these pictures being posted. So I got this, you know, there's 47 years I've been with my wife, and since I met her. And, you know, so I was not that guy. But I certainly was clean and sober enough to observe. And, yeah,
right.
It was that wild. It was that crazy. I wasn't participating, but it was going on. And you know what? I made a choice for myself, and I've got no regrets in my choice. You know, as Rodney Dangerfield, the legendary comedian, once said, the 3 hours of bullshit ain't worth the 3 minutes of pleasure. And I've got four kids. My fifth grandkid's going to arrive literally any minute, waiting to get the call. And, and I've got a great life. So I gave up one thing for another thing.
Good
you know, I see many of my peers, and, they're either starting, you know, having kids in their 50s. Good luck with that. Or they're just ruined or destroyed their lives and lost everything they work for in divorces.
What was the, did you ever play Texas Jam? A lot of you can relate to this. My goal is to eat healthy and stress-free this spring, and you will not find healthier and easier options than Factor Meals. Here's why. Every fresh, never frozen meal is chef-crafted, dietitian approved, and ready to eat in just 2 minutes. See, that's healthy and easy. Choose from a weekly menu of 35 options. This includes popular options like Calorie Smart, Keto, Protein Plus, or Vegan. On top of the amazing options from Factor Meals, you have the option of 60 different add-ons every week. This can include breakfast or on-the-go lunch or even snacks. It's healthy and easy, so get started today. Chef-prepared meals on the table in 2 minutes with Factor's ready-to-eat meals with premium ingredients like filet mignon, shrimp, broccolini, or truffle butter. And the Factor meals are no-mess meals. That means no prepping, cooking, or cleaning up. Heat and savor the good stuff. It's that easy. Factor meals are all about your schedule. Customize your weekly meals and get as much or as little as you need. Pause or reschedule deliveries to match your lifestyles. You want healthy and easy, or just easy? Do this. Go to factormeals.com/JeffWard50. Use the code JeffWard50 to get 50% off your first box and 20% off your next box. Try Factor Meals. You'll love it. My family's crazy about them. Do this. Go to factormeals.com/JeffWard50. Use the code JeffWard50 and you get 50% off your first box and 20% off your next box. Remember it. It's factormeals.com/JeffWard50. This episode is sponsored by Blue Chew. Guys, boost your performance by going to BlueChew.com. That's Blue Chew. Go to BlueChew.com. Listen up. Blue Chew is a unique online service that delivers the same active ingredients as Viagra, Cialis, and Levitra, but in chewable tablets, and best of all, at a fraction of the cost. You can take them anytime, day or night, so you can plan ahead. The process is simple. Sign up at BlueChew.com, consult with one of their licensed medical providers, and once you're approved, you'll receive your prescription within days. The best part? It's all done online. No visit to the doctor's office, no awkward conversations, no waiting in line at the pharmacy. Blue Chew tablets are made in the U.S. and prepared and shipped direct to your door in a discreet package. It works. Discover your options by going to BlueChew.com. Here's a special deal. Try BlueChew.com free when you use the promo code Jeff Ward at checkout. Just pay the $5 shipping. Do this now. Go to BlueChew.com. Use the promo code Jeff Ward. Receive your first month free. Visit BlueChew.com for more details and important safety information. BlueChew sponsors this podcast.
When you drive a vehicle so reliable it's backed by a 10-year, 100,000-mile limited warranty, you stop thinking about what you can't do and start doing what you never thought possible. Visit your local Kia dealer today to see what you're capable of in a vehicle that inspires confidence around every corner. Kia. Movement that inspires.
Call 800-333-4KIA for details. Always drive safely. Limited inventory available. Warranties include 10-year, 100,000-mile powertrain and 5-year, 60,000-mile basic. Warranties are limited. See retailer for details.
No, I did not play Texas Jam. That's a legendary show.
Yeah.
But, I've done, you know, festivals, that's my bread and butter, man. I love festivals. You know, when you get to play to 50, 60, 70, 90,000 people in a clip, and not just your audience. I don't know how many fans, because I know how to work a room, you know, and God gave me a head the size of a watermelon, so people at the back of the arena can see me, you know. So, and I love those festival settings because, you know, you got your fans that are there, but then it's the people who are stuck there, who hate your guts, you know, and then all of a sudden by the end they're going, hey, that band's pretty cool. You know, so, yeah, those festivals are awesome.
Yeah, they, I guess I live in Austin, so we have plenty of music festivals, but it's no longer as one genre. You didn't go to there's no stadium bands, so you sure the heck aren't going to a metal festival.
Well, you know, the U.S. is different than Europe. And my God, in Europe, the metal festivals we play, like I said, we did, was it 75,000 at the Montreal Metal Fest? So, you know, that was Metallica, Twisted, Anthrax, Body Count, Slayer. It was all metal. You go to Hellfest in France, 75,000 people all the time. Bang Your Head in Germany, 50,000. So the Download Festival, all metal all the time. So they're out there and they're packing them in. But it's still largely dependent on the AC/DCs, the Iron Maiden, the Metallicas. These bands are aging out. They're aging out. I've been to smaller festivals, like, you know, and some great ones, but they're dealing with, you know, 15,000, 20,000 for, and you've got like 40 bands, you know, but they're bringing 20,000 in. But those, man, those Rock in Rio festivals, million people, they're few and far between now.
Yeah. No, I mean, and the artists end up canceling a lot of the time.